Okay, good morning. Hope everyone had a good Shabbos, a good weekend. Let's continue a little bit in the Midbar. So remember again, just a quick review. We started the Midbar last week. A quick review from what we were focusing on so far. So remember again, back up to number one for just a moment. So the Midbar said, Midbar Omer, Yususum Midbar Vitzia Visagel Arava Visifrach Kachavatzalas. The wilderness and the desert shall rejoice, and the arid region shall exult and blossom like the rose. Remember again, we only really covered the first approach, which was the Radak in the Gemara, who understood that this statement, or really this pasuk, was ultimately a reference to the struggle between Esav and Yaakov, the struggle ultimately again between Eretz Yisrael and Umos Olam. Yes. We have them here. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. So the struggle ultimately between Am Yisrael and the nations of the world, representing the idea that there's always one on top, one on the bottom. There's always a victor, and there's always someone who has lost. That's the nature of the struggle. We saw the Gemara that said, if anyone tells you that Yerushalayim and Kesari, right, and Rome are both settled, don't believe them. Both destroyed, don't believe them. One built, one destroyed, believe them. And again, sometimes it's Rome on top, Yerushalayim on the bottom, sometimes Yerushalayim on top, Rome on the bottom, but there's always this struggle. We then began, we didn't complete it, which is what we're going to focus on today. We then began the second approach, which began with number four on your sheet. The Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, B'chol Levavcha, B'chol Nafshecha, U'v'chol Ma'odecha. So if you remember again, we spent a little bit of time focusing on what's the problem with this pasuk. What's the problem? How can you legislate emotion, right? How can you tell me how to feel? You can tell me what to do. You can tell me how to behave. But to tell me how to feel, you generally can't command people to feel a certain way. So we saw Rashi asay dvarav me'ava, but then we shifted our focus ultimately to b'chol levavcha. What does it mean to love Hashem with all of your heart? So Rashi HaKadosh said, Bishnei Yitzrecha, but we're going to focus on the Davar Acher, Shelo Yehi Libcha Chalok Ala Makom. Literally translated, your heart should not be divided against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you remember again, how did we define, what's the Pshuto Shalmikah? What's the Pashat understanding? The simple understanding, Rashi, Shelo Yehi Libcha Chalok Ala Makom. Excellent. Don't be a fair weather Jew. Don't just simply have allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when your life is good and things are as you want it. Rather, again, let your heart not be divided against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That Ribon Shalom, always have your love, always have your allegiance, no matter what's going on in life. Now, the truth is this sense of allegiance unique to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What would you say? Is this the only relationship this applies to?
No.
No, where else does it apply? Pretty much in every other relationship you have. Meaning, I think we've spoken about this before, that the nature of human relationships is that they are filled with failures. By definition, human beings are imperfect. We're all imperfect, which means at some point in time we're going to fail or be failed. If you only love the people with whom you have a relationship, when they're good to you or do what you want or how you want, it'll be difficult to forge relationships. That's true whether it's a marriage. That's true whether it's friendships. So there's always an element of failure in human relationships. But again, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, but yet with other relationships, the truth is a person can choose to extricate themselves from that relationship. With a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that relationship is supposed to endure for all eternity. So therefore, Rashi says on a simple level, She'libcha chalak ala makom. Let your heart not be divided against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't just love him, obey him, serve him when he does what you want. But even when life is not going according to your plan, a person should still summon up the inner courage to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I want to share with you, really, and this is where we're going to spend the majority of our time on this morning, an incredible and overwhelming insight by the Eish Kodesh. So if you remember, again, I mentioned the Eish Kodesh before. The Eish Kodesh is the Rebbe of Piazhetsna, Rav Kolomis Kamish Shapira. So the Piazhetsna was a Hasidish Rebbe. He was a child prodigy. His parents died when he was very young. He was an accomplished musician, I think self-taught, I think the violin. And he was just an incredible Talmud Chacham. Already as a young man, he attracted a very large following. The city of Piasecznia is not far from Warsaw. So he had a community in Piasecznia, but he had a yeshiva in Warsaw. He was an incredible Talmud Chacham, looked at as one of the Gidolim. He was a very young man already at the outset of the war. His wife had passed away before. We've spoken about this before, right? Piasecznia. Okay, so his wife passed away before the war. Already he had a son and a daughter. He had two children, a son Elimelech ben Sion and a daughter Rachel Yehudis. His son Elimelech ben Sion was married before the war, and Elimelech ben Sion and his wife were killed during the German bombardment of Poland. So September 1st, 1939, when the Germans invade Poland, they bombard Poland by air and by land. So his children are killed in the bombardment, his son and his daughter-in-law. Rachel Yehudis was with the Piasecznia in the ghetto, but she's taken by one of the selections, taken off to Treblinka. She died in Treblinka. The Piasecznia never knew what happened to her. The Piasecznia also dies in the ghetto. He's murdered outside of the ghetto in a roundup in the ghetto. Piasecznia did a number of different things in the ghetto. He ran a system of yeshivos, shuls, chesed organizations. But what the Piasecznia is remembered most for are the drushas he gave during those Shabbosos in the Warsaw ghetto. Those drushas he would give whenever circumstances permitted, he would give a drusha in the ghetto. Matzi Shabbos, he would write it down. There's interesting enough, there's a little bit of historical debate as to who exactly wrote down the drushas. Because when you look at the manuscripts, you'll actually notice there's different handwriting at different times, which of course leads people to understand that there was probably more than one person, unless, of course, the Piasecznia's handwriting changed as a result of some event that occurred. The drushas are hidden, put in a milk canister in the ghetto, discovered after the war, sent to Eretz Yisrael, and compiled as a sefer titled Esh Kodesh, Holy Fire. The Piasecznia did not name the sefer. He didn't give a title to it. But ultimately, again, it was named Esh Kodesh. So the Rebbe gives an incredible, incredible drusha on Parshas Yisro, Tuf Shin. Now, there is another incredible book that came out not so long ago. This is number 7 on your sheet. So, interestingly enough, this is a book called Torah from the Years of Wrath, written by a Dr. Henry Abramson. Dr. Abramson is a Talmud Chacham and a historian, and what he did was as follows. You see, what the Piasecznia did do is he dated each of the drushos. So we know exactly when each of the drushos were given. What Dr. Abramson then did is he went ahead and he took the date of the drusha, and based on the date of the drusha, told us what was happening in the ghetto that particular week. So it's incredible. So you can literally understand historically what was happening that Shabbos. Now, when you understand historically what was happening that week leading up to that Shabbos, you begin to understand why the Piasecznia spoke about some of the things that he did. Meaning the themes are always stirring and always overwhelming. But at the end of the day, when you begin to see what was happening in the week leading up to that Shabbos, the Piasecznia's drushas really take on an incredible different level of urgency and meaning. So this drusha was given on January 20th, 1940, the year Tuf Shin, 1940. So take a look at number 7 for just a moment, just to kind of give you a little bit of the background. On Parashas B'Shalach, January 20th, a young rebel escaped from the notorious Paiviak prison, located not far from the Piasecznia Beis Medrash. Andrei Kut, the 21-year-old leader of the military wing of a resistance movement called the Polish People's Independence Action, was a child of assimilated Jewish parents who had converted to Christianity. Despite his tenuous connections to the Jewish community, the Nazis immediately posted signs around the ghetto offering 2,000 zloty for the arrest of the Jew Andrei Kut. More ominously, the Nazis invoked once again their policy of collective punishment. By Thursday, they had rounded up 255 Jews, searching primarily for well-known community leaders and professionals, but also seizing Jews off the street and apparently random arrests. None of the hostages survived Nazi incarceration. So this is incredible. So what Dr. Abramson is pointing out over here, and this is the Nazis, Yimach Shalom V'Zichram, did this unfortunately often, where what he refers to as collective punishment. So when somebody decided they did not like the way to get the person to turn themselves in, to give themselves up for arrest, was to hold the community at large responsible. So this Andrei Kot escapes from prison, and how do the Nazis turn the screws on the Jewish community to try to give him up? By arresting leaders. And again, arrest was never just arrest. Arrest was almost always arrest and execution. Now, the reason why this is incredible is as follows. If you take a look, so still in number 7, do you see that handwritten box there on the right? So what that says is, Bishabes zu hayisi behe chave, Parshas Yisro. So how does the Rebbe begin the drasha? What's the note on top? The note on top was, this Shabbos was in Hayisi Beichaveh. I was hiding. I wasn't hiding. So remember again, when you read this drasha by itself, you wonder to yourself, why was the Rebbe hiding this Shabbos? Remember again, the shuls themselves were always conducted clandestinely. But it's amazing that here the Rebbe goes out of his way to make a specific note. This Shabbos, I was in hiding. This Shabbos, I was. Now again, whether that means that he was in hiding all alone, or that he was in hiding with a smaller group, what it sounds like is the regular shul that he, or the regular minyan, that he convened Shabbos to Shabbos, he did not convene that week. So he's in hiding, either by himself, or the much more, and again, it's just amazing. That's the handwriting of the Rebbe. That's the handwriting of the Piaget Hashem Yikom Damo. B'Shabes Zu Hayisi Beichavei Parshas Yisro. So Dr. Abramson writes, the Rebbe spent the following Shabbos Yisro, January 27th, in hiding. The entry for that week begins with an unusual first-person annotation. Immediately after the traditional opening, Blessed is God, Baruch Hashem Yisro, the Rebbe added the phrase in exile. Then he struck out the phrase and wrote it, on this Shabbos, I was in hiding. So he writes over here, the size and makeup of the Rebbe's audience that week remains unknown. He may have been speaking with other communal leaders who were also hiding from Nazi patrols. It is not impossible that he was completely alone, recording his thoughts for posterity. The Rebbe's message, however, was one of defiance and spiritual courage. Certainly reflecting on his immediate situation, the Rebbe emphasized the value of learning Torah under difficult circumstances. So that's just, again, it's just amazing. It's just amazing to see. It happens today, I would tell you. It's an incredible book to read. Again, from the Torah from the years of wrath. It gives you not only the incredible Torah of the Piagetzna, but it gives you an incredible historical account of everything that happened during the Piagetzna's life. He also has an excellent introduction where he describes the Piagetzna's life before the war, which is incredible as well. So go back to number 6 now. Now I want to share with you this idea from the Piagetzna. So now, B'Shabbos Zoyisi Ve'chaveh, this Shabbos I was in hiding. Parshas Yisro, January 1940. So he goes on, Ava Kabbalah. So let me take a step back. The Piagetzna, I only gave you a small piece over here. The Piagetzna begins this piece with a profound question. His profound question is as follows. Where, if you were deciding on the proper location for Kabbalah HaTorah, where would you have staged Kabbalah HaTorah? Sinaitic revelation. Or Sinaitic revelation. Giving of the Torah. Where would you have staged it? Harabais. Right? Simple. Not even a question. Harabai, Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, and certainly Harabais. Harabais, again, which according to the Chazal, is from the spot, the earth, from which everything else was created. The Evan HaShasiyah, the first piece of matter in this world, is Harabayis, Akedas Yitzchak, Yaakov Avinu's dream, the future site of the Bate Mikdash, seems to be the perfect site for Kabbalah HaTorah. Yet, where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to give the Torah? Har Sinai. Where is Har Sinai? Midbar. Where in the Midbar? Somewhere in the Midbar. You know, it's interesting, Rav Goren, who was its first the first chief rabbi of the IDF, then becomes chief rabbi of Israel, he was convinced that he knew the location of Har Sinai. Again, there are a couple of historians that say this. So he actually took a group of soldiers up to Har Sinai. Here's the interesting part. Even if you were to know the location of Har Sinai, what's the Kiddushas HaMakom? What's the sanctity of the place? There is none. It's a very important idea. There is no sanctity to Har Sinai. The sanctity of Har Sinai is when the Shekhinah came down. Then again, remember, there was incredible sanctity. That's why not everyone could approach the mountain. The moment the Shekhinah left, there is no Kiddusha to the place, which is even more profound. That here you have the site of not only the greatest revelation. You know, so people think that the greatness of Kabbalah Satorah was the greatest revelation. It was the time where God revealed himself to man in no other. No other religion claims a mass revelation like we have. That's great that God can reveal himself, but that's not the Ikar. The Ikar is that Har Sinai is the place we receive the Torah. The Torah is who we are. The Torah is our identity. The Torah didn't just change our lives. The Torah changed the face of humanity forever. It is the site of the great, next to creation, the next greatest event is Kabbalah Satorah. Without Torah, there's no Am Yisrael, right? This is very important. You know, when we refer to Avraham Avinu as the first Jew, was Avraham Avinu the first Jew?
No,
Avraham Avinu was an Ivri. We translate Ivri as Hebrew or as Jew, just means Me'ivra Lanar, right? There are no Jews until Kabbalah Satorah. It's Torah that gives us identity. Before Torah, there's monotheists, right? There's B'nai Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They are very righteous people. But the notion of Am Yisrael, a Jewish nation, Am Nifcham, Am Lechas, Konem, Goy Kadosh, that all comes from Kabbalah Satorah. So literally, Kabbalah Satorah, next to Ma'aseh Bereishis, next to creation, is the greatest event that has ever occurred to humanity. And yet, the location is totally unknown. And even if it's not unknown, meaning even if we were able to identify Har Sinai, if you want to take your family and go for a picnic and play frisbee on Har Sinai, you could do that also. Contrast that with what? What other location we just mentioned before? Har Habayis. What's the amazing part about Har Habayis? What's the status of Har Habayis today? So the truth is, it's subject to interesting machlokas, right? We know there's a fundamental machlokas about Kiddusha Shnia, Kiddusha L'Shaita, Kiddusha L'Asad Lavo. When the Har Habayis, when Ezra comes back to Eretz Yisrael and re-sanctifies the land, is that sanctification eternal? Or did that sanctification only last until the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash? So many hold that once the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the sanctification of the land leaves. Which is why, for example, according to the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, Trumas and Maisos today in Eretz Yisrael are Dirabanan. Right? They're not biblical, it's Dirabanan. But amazingly enough, even according to opinions who say that the Kiddusha of Eretz Yisrael is not the same. This is why, by the way, you know where this comes up all the time? Right? The hot button issue is Shemitah. Right, so again, a person never has the opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael for Shemitah, where you eat, what you eat, Het Mechira, not Het Mechira. The whole notion that Het Mechira is even a possibility is because Shemitah Bizman HaZeh is Dirabanan, which again is a function of Kiddushas HaAretz Bizman HaZeh. Not our topic for today. And then, yes?
Just to clarify, so we became Bnei Yisrael by Yitzchak Mitzrayim. We don't say that there's any Jewish people
until
Matan Torah. So the first Jew was 6,000 people?
Correct. The first Jew was 600,000. Right. But remember, it's not just that 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60. It's right. About 3.5 million people left Mitzrayim. But yes, the identity of Am Yisrael becomes known ultimately again through Matan Torah. Now, the truth is, what you're bringing up is an important point. We call Bnei Yisrael already Bnei Yisrael earlier on, from Yitzias Mitzrayim. So it seems that the Torah Kedosha kind of gives us, backs up that identity already to Yitzias, because that was the first national event, but the solidification or concretization of our national identity is only by Har Sinai.
So people say that Yaakov was the first Jew,
it's not really technically correct. Meaning there's no Am Yisrael, no Jews. Right? First of all, even the name Jew is a function from Yehuda. Jews only become known as Yehudim even later on. But Lamaisa, no, it's not a technically correct statement. They're not the first Jew. Avraham Avinu might have been the first monotheist. Right? His children were monotheists. To say they were Jews, I think is technically incorrect. Again, doesn't diminish their tzidkus, doesn't diminish their role. But Am Yisrael, as the identity is Har Sinai, yes.
We say that Avram is the first Jew is because Hashem chose, like, Zer Yisrael from him.
100%. He's the father. But remember, again, there's a lot of Zer that comes from Avram Avinu. Right? It's not just so correct, meaning Avram Avinu, but to say he's the first Jew, he's the father of Am Yisrael. Does that make him the first Jew? I don't know. In other words, the technical identity of Am Yisrael is one that is solidified at Matan Torah. I don't think it's incorrect to call him the first. He's the father of Am Yisrael. So, what was I saying? Har Sinai Har Abayis. Good. See, even if you hold that even according to those who hold that the Kiddush of Eretz Yisrael, let's say but was somewhat diminished after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, many still agree that the Kiddush of Har Abayis remains intact to this very day. That's subject to Machlokas also. Some say that Har Abayis doesn't have the same Kiddusha either in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, but there are many who hold that Kiddushas Har Abayis remains, which is why, you know, this way there's a lot of Machlokas that are going up to Har Abayis today. Can you go up to Har Abayis? Not go up to Har Abayis? Even if you hold you can go up to Har Abayis, there's only certain areas that you can walk on Har Abayis, not throughout the entire Har Abayis, because we assume that Har Abayis today still has Kiddushas HaMikdash, which is an incredible, incredible thing. So you contrast these two mountains. Har Abayis, which of course was incredibly significant, yet still retains its Kiddusha to this very day. Har Sinai, which is the site of the greatest revelation, what's its status? Nothing. Right? Literally nothing. Like to the point that would there even be like a concept of going, if you knew where Har Abayis was, would there be a concept of going for a minyan there, have David? No. No, it has no Kiddusha. If you were to identify it, it might be interesting to see. This is the place where Kabbalah Satara took place, but the Makkum, the place itself, has absolutely no Kiddusha. So the Piagetzna is bothered by this. He says, how could it be that the site of Kabbalah's HaTorah, that the site of Kabbalah's HaTorah, ultimately, again, is going to be, has no Kiddusha to it. But he's bothered by something else. We don't even know where it is. It's totally faded into anonymity. We don't even know where the place is. How could this be that something so important could disappear into total obscurity? And the Piagetzna says something amazing. Take a look, number 6. Aval Kabbalas HaTorah b'Midbar Haisa. Torah is given literally in the middle of nowhere. Ve'efsha l'rameiz l'hashi isa b'sefer HaKadosh Beis Aron HaDivrei Rashi. Shema Yisrael Shemakim HaShem HaChad Yad HaShem HaKad B'chol V'avcha B'chol Nafshcha B'chol Ma'odecha. He quotes our Rashi in number 5. What does HaKadosh Baruch, what does the Torah say when it says, love God with all your heart b'chol V'avcha? Shelo Yelipcha Chalok Al HaMakom. That, so remember, how do we translate that phrase, Shalei Lipcha Chalak Al HaMakom, one more time? How do we translate it? Don't be a fair-weather Jew, right? Don't just love God when he's doing things that you want, but disassociate when times are difficult. Always be with him. Look what the Piagetzna says, an incredibly dramatic idea. Shalei Lipcha Chalak Al HaMakom V'or B'Kodsho, Shalei Tomar B'Makom Hazeh Efshar La'Avodas Hashem U'B'Makom Hazeh E'ef Shirli. Rak b'chol makom tzrichim lavod es Hashem adkan. So look what the Rebbe says. He quotes it from the Sefer Beis Aron, who says something so. What is it? Shalei lipcha chalak ala makom. The Beis Aron, the Rebbe quotes this idea that makom. See Rashi. When we read Rashi, we assume what does makom refer to? Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Hamakom yinachim eschem. Right. So again, lo yalei lipcha chalak ala makom. Rebbe says no. Makom actually means what? Means what? A geographic place. Do you know what happens sometimes in the realm of Ruchnius? That a person says, you know what? Here, in this place, I could be pious. In this place, in this makom, I could be inspired. In this place, I can be frum. In this place, I could be connected. But in this place, in this other location, no. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not here. There's no Ruchnius here. There's no inspiration here. Comes along the Torah. What does it mean to love Hashem with all of your heart? Never allow your spirituality to be tethered to geography. Never think that in one spot you can find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in somewhere else you cannot. Wherever you are, you absolutely have the ability to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam. So this is incredible. Says the Piagetz, look, he goes on. L'chein ilu kiblu Yisrael es HaTorah ba'artzam ba'aretz Yisrael. So now we understand. Had the Torah been given in Eretz Yisrael, what would you have thought? Very simple. What's the message? Torah is only in Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only in Eretz Yisrael, right? After all, that was the intended site of revelation, Eretz Yisrael. Hayuchoshvim, Shirak bim komam, ube beisam, efshar lahem lekayim osa, velokishem bagola umituradim. You see, if Torah was given in Eretz Yisrael, I would have thought that it's only in Eretz Yisrael that you can have a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only in Eretz Yisrael that you could be inspired. Only in Eretz Yisrael that you could find ruchnius. But when we're exiled, when we're in faraway lands, when we're in difficult circumstances, sorry, there is no ruchnius to be found. Lachain, Nasan Hashem Allahem HaTorah Bamidbar Ubiderech Tiltu. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the Torah where? In Midbar, in the desert. Now understand, the desert is a couple of things. Number one, see, we can't relate to it as much during our 40-year sojourn in the desert because desert life wasn't all that difficult for us because HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of us, right? We had the man, we had the be'er, we had the anan, and even with all that, Klal Yisrael still complained. The Midbar represents not only something that is astonishingly empty, but the Midbar also represents difficulty and challenge. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the Torah HaKadosh in the middle of the Midbar, in the middle of nothingness, in the middle of a place that represents such difficulty and challenge, to teach us this incredible lesson. Spirituality is not tethered to geography. You have the ability to become as ruchni and as connected and as inspired as you want, wherever and whenever you want. Lachin, Nasan Hashem Lahem HaTorah Bamidbar B'derech Tiltul Sheyedu Shebechol Mokom Tzrichim L'Kaimo K'ne'emar La'el Shalei Libcha Chalak Alamakom. So this is one of my favorite pieces from the Piagetzna. An incredible, incredible idea. Shalei Libcha Chalak Alamakom. Do not allow your heart to be divided against the place. Do not think, and this is so incredibly important, because people do this all of the time. Is Eretz Yisrael a special place? Of course. Is there a Hashras Hashchina, a manifestation of the divine in Eretz Yisrael, that is not the same anywhere else in this world? Unequivocally, yes. Of course. But does that mean that the ability to be a holy and inspired Jew is limited to Eretz Yisrael? Of course not. Of course not. There's no question that the Ruchnius of Eretz Yisrael is on a different Ramah, meaning it's different. It's just a different experience. But at the end of the Shloi Yilipcha Chalak Ala Makom, never think that your geography determines your spirituality. If you want a life of inspiration, you want a life of spiritual connectedness, wherever you are, you can have that. And by the way, yes. Oh, easier? Yes. Sure. 100%. Just like it's easier if you live in a Torah community versus if you live in the middle of nowhere. Absolutely. Easier? 100%. 100%. What the Rebbe said about here is access. Never think that access is limited to a particular place. Anywhere you are, 100%. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is accessible. Easier some places? 1,000%. What I also want to add on to the Rebbe's idea over here is understand, once the Rebbe is expanding the notion of makom to not mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but mean geographic area, makom doesn't just have to mean geographic realities as well. What else could it refer to?
Situational.
Right, situational or emotional realities as well. Sometimes a person thinks that when there is certain makom, right? Sometimes my makom is not, I don't care about my geography, my makom is where I am internally. My makom is where I am spiritually, emotionally. Sometimes I think that I am disconnected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of certain situational realities. Therefore, Rashi comes along and says, Shiloye Lipcha Chaluk Ala Makom. It does not matter where you are geographically. It does not matter where you are situationally. It does not matter where you are emotionally or spiritually. Wherever you are in life, a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is accessible and available to you. Just to highlight this, because the truth is, in last week's parasha, there's another piece that highlights this. Remember, again, the end of the parasha, where Yaakov runs away from Lavan, right? He runs away without telling him. Lavan catches up with him. So what do they effect? A treaty, right? Where is the treaty made? Galed, right? And so Yaakov called it Galed. What did Lavan call it? Yigar Sahadusa. What's the obvious question? Why what?
Why did one call it?
So first of all, why do they have to call it different? It's good, fine-tune that a little bit. Why does the Torah have to tell me that Lavan called the Yigar Sadusa? Like, what does that mean? Galit. Remember, Yigar Sadusa is not Hebrew. It's not Hebrew. It's some Semitic version, right? I mean, we identify it as Aramaic, but the truth is Aramaic is a later language. But at the end of the day, why does the Torah have to tell me that? Not only that, this happens a couple of times in the Torah. What is the word of the Torah for tefillin? Totafos. Right, totafos means what in Hebrew? Right? The answer is, it doesn't mean anything in Hebrew because it's not a Hebrew word. Rashi points out that totafos is a contraction between two foreign words, tat bekafsi and pas ba'afriki. So tas is some type of kafsi language, pas pesof is some type of African dialect, and in each of those dialects, pas means two, I'm sorry, tat means two, pas means two, two plus two, good, four compartments, four parashios and tefillin. What? Why can't you find just the Hebrew word? Why do you have to use one more? When Moshe Rabbeinu, beginning at Parashas Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu is leading Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, they're standing by Eivor LeYarden, right? By the Eivor LeYarden. What do they do? Ho'il Moshe be'eres HaTorah hazos leimor. What does Rashi say on that pasuk? Be'eres HaTorah hazos leimor. What does Rashi say? Shivim Lashonos, right? They translate the Torah into 70 languages. What's the obvious question? How many languages do Klal Yisrael speak? I don't know. Maybe, you know, Hebrew, right? Or Lashon HaKodesh, we'll call it. Maybe some Egyptian, right? I don't know, but certainly not 70 languages. So, amazing of what's happening over here, you see a variety of different circumstances where the Torah Kedosha goes out of its way to bring in foreign languages. Tefillin, Yigar Sadusa, 70 languages. Why? So Rabbi Yitzhak Abraditchev says something so beautiful. He says that Kodesh Baruch Hu knew, of course, that we would not remain forever in Eretz Yisrael, that we would be cast out, that we would be dispersed. And it's easy for the Jew to think that when we are cast out and dispersed from the land, that we no longer have access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Torah, and to Ruchnius. So what does the Torah HaKadosh itself do? It dafka employs foreign dialectic words. It employs words from other languages to tell us that no matter where you are, no matter what language you're speaking, no matter what land you are in, there is always the ability to find the Kodesh Baruch Hu, always the ability to find Ruchnius, always an opportunity to connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And this is an incredible message. So now, if we bring this back to the Piagetzna, so do you understand the profundity of this message? Understand where is the Piagetzna? Whether he's delivering this as a drasha or whether he's just writing this after Shabbos, where is he writing this? Where is he writing this? He's writing this literally again, Begeit Salmaves, in the valley of the shadow of death, in the Warsaw ghetto. And what's the message that he's delivering? What's the message of the Piagetzna? Even here, we can find the Kaddish Baruch Hu. Even here, even in the midst of this Gehenna, even in the midst of these terrible atrocities, even in the midst of this place, we're just walking around on a regular day, we have to step over corpses. Even in this place where there are no longer any children, because the children have all been taken. Even in this place where everyone walks around with a shattered heart, even in this place, Shalei Lipcha Chalok Ala Makam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here as well. So you see over here something, the Piagetzna ultimately encouraging these broken Jews. Even in the midst of this horrific Gehenna, you know, Gehenna is bad, this is a horrific Gehenna. And he's still telling them, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still absolutely and unequivocally accessible and available to you. No matter how terrible things are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here with us. So perhaps, Perhaps going back to number one, that's also part of the message over here. Midbar Omer, using the words of the Piaget. So what does the Midbar teach us? Yisusum Midbar Betzia. The wilderness and the desert shall rejoice. Visagel Arava, the arid region shall exult. Sifrach Kichavatzelis will blossom like the rose. What does the Midbar teach us? There are many times in life where life is like a Midbar. Sometimes I find myself in a geographic Midbar. I'm in the middle of nowhere. Maybe there are not, ultimately, again, the appendages for successful Jewish living where I live. Right? I find myself in a geographic Midbar. Other times, I find myself in an emotional Midbar. I'm in a bad place emotionally. A spiritual Midbar. I'm in a bad place spiritually. An intellectual, you fill in the blank. A lot of times in life, we find ourselves in the middle of a Midbar. Situational, geographic, emotional, spiritual. And I feel so forsaken. I feel like I'm living in a wasteland. And in those moments, I assume that I'm down and out, and a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is impossible. What does the Midbar say? Even the wilderness, even the desert will rejoice. Even the arid region will rejoice. Why? Because ultimately, again, v'sifrach kechavaselas. Because you could find a way to blossom like the rose, even in the midst of the Midbar. Even when life is exceptionally difficult, either because of your geographic, emotional, spiritual, situational circumstances, a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always available. Shelipcha chalak ala makom. And as long as a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is available to you, that'll give you the koach to rebuild yourself and to rebuild your circumstances. So even if you find yourself in the middle of the Midbar, this is the Midbar talking to us. Even if you find yourself in the middle of me, thinking that you're down and out, you have nothing, you're in the middle of the wasteland, just remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there with you. The opportunity for Ruach Nius is there with you. The opportunity to rebuild, to regroup, to regenerate, to experience that renaissance, that renewal, that rebirth, that reconnection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still there. And if you believe in that, then the Sifrach Kechavatzelas, then even if you find yourself in the midst of the desert of life, that reigniting of the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you the ability to re-blossom like the rose. All right, we'll stop over here for today. And Emir Tashem, on Wednesday, we're going to do two more approaches with the Midbar.